I'm grateful for the amount of space and time you folks often allow for silence. I know we are, as they say among friends, a programmed, maybe even kind of a semi-programmed meeting, but you would probably be surprised at some other meetings whose silence is much shorter. And I often need it just to get my own head and heart in this space before I speak. So I'm glad and grateful, for the sharing. You know, they say that sometimes a pastor's job is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. I may do both this morning. I don't know. I have no idea. But I want to share a little bit about this idea of Jesus, plain and simple, which will be a theme that will carry on at least through Easter. And I want to begin this way, with this observation. One wonders what words and actions we want to leave with those closest to us when we know we only have so much time to live. One wonders what we would say. What wonders what we would offer. What wonders what we would have to share with folks. Now, I know that feels like a little bit of a downer thought, but in reality, it's worth thinking about. One of my favorite speeches, at the risk of seeing as if I'm partial to certain rivalries, but one of my favorite speeches is that of Jimmy Valvano, North Carolina State coach who gave his acceptance speech in 1993 when he was awarded the Arthur Ashe Courage and Humanitarian Award. Now, I know some of you have this video probably on your phone. No, Sloan, none of this now. Okay, I saw that back there. Just keep little hand motions down, all right? So Valvano didn't have much time left in this life due to terminal cancer. And he probably knew that, so he gave this speech as he received this award, the speech of his life, and it began this way. Quote, "Time is very precious to me. I don't know how much I have left, and I have some things I would like to say. Hopefully, at the end, I will have said something that will be important to other people, too." Now, I'm going to make a quick connection here. This is kind of what I think Jesus was doing in the last week or two of his life. I think Jesus is saying, I don't know how much time I have left, so there are some things I have left to say. Well, then, go back to Jimmy. He goes on to talk about what's important to him in life, laughing, spending time in thought, having your emotions moved at least each day. And he talked about the very first pep talk he gave as a coach, and he talked about the strength his family gave him. And then my favorite line of the whole speech is when he says this, quote, "That screen, it was on TV, that screen is flashing up there 30 seconds. Like I care about that screen right now. I got tumors all over my body, and I'm worried about some guy in the back going, you only got 30 seconds. That is my absolute favorite part. But then he continues on with energy and passion, talking about the importance of enthusiasm, raising money for cancer. And then he winds it down with these words. It's the very final paragraph. I know I got to go. I got to go. I got one last thing. And I said it before, I'm going to say it again. Cancer cannot take away all my physical abilities. It can't touch my mind. It can't touch my heart. It can't touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever. I thank you, and God bless you all." It's got to be one of the greatest speeches of all time. I kid you not. Rivalries all aside. But this is what he wanted to say. Plain and simple. He knew he did not have much time. In fact, he died less than a couple months later. And so he said what he needed to say, plain and simple, and he wasn't going to let a blinking light, I'm not cussing there, I'm just saying it was an actual blinking light. He wasn't going to let a blinking light tell him he only had 30 seconds to go and that he needed to stop. He just knew what he had to say, and he was done. Now, I think it's what Jesus did as he journeyed closer and closer to his death. He moved from parables and analogies and figures of speech to speak plainly and simply. He inasmuch says this to his disciples in what Don read this morning, quote, "I've been using figures of speech with you. The time is coming, and I'll no longer speak to you in such analogies. Instead, I will tell you plainly about the Father." All right, another very important man in my life, person. And some of you here this morning know exactly who I'm talking about, Jack Kirk. Jack Kirk pastored at Archdale Friends Meeting. He was the guy that got me down here to North Carolina, along with a couple others. He was pastoring at the time. A wonderful human being, one of my greatest encouragers. Linda and I get cards from Jack and Janet almost every year. And every year he tells me the most glorious things about myself that I'm not even sure are going to pan out. But coming from Jack Kirk, you just pretty much feel it's going to be that way. A few years ago, he wrote an article entitled, "What Does a Quaker Look Like?" which I thought was very good, because when I was in high school, I took a group of guys home from baseball practice. I was a senior, got in our Vega. Yes, I had a Vega, full confession, got in the Vega. And we were driving home, and they're all really quiet. I mean, really quiet. I said to them, "Guys, what's going on? Why is nobody talking?" And they said, "Well, you're driving a car." I said, "Yeah." "Well, your dad's a Quaker pastor, isn't he?" I saw where this was going. "Yes," I said, "my dad's a Quaker pastor." "Guys, guess what? When we get to my house, we got electricity, we got running water, you can use the restroom, and we got a refrigerator. Isn't that great?" They had this whole other vision of what a Quaker looks like. So Jack wrote, "What Does a Quaker Look Like?" And in it, he talked about how Jesus was at first mistaken as the gardener at the resurrection, and it was later folks soon came to recognize him as the risen Jesus. But at first, he appeared as a very plain, ordinary person. And then Jack makes the case that Quakers need to have that plain and simple look in the world, not an outward plainness, but a plainness that, as he wrote in his article, it looks like this. It starts at the inner core of our lives as we relate to the living Christ. And it is an inner search as we ask ourselves questions like this. Can I live without pretense? Can I live without pretending to know something about everything as though I have all the answers? That's the authentic living to which we're called, he wrote. Quakers should look like plain people. I have always appreciated that image. So how does this plainness and simplicity begin showing up in Jesus as he journeys toward the end of his life? I reflected on three stories. I'm not going to go into depth on all three of them. We don't have that much time, but I just reflected on three instances in Jesus' life in and around the gospel that was read this morning. The first is this, the death of Lazarus in John 11. Jesus receives word that his friend Lazarus has passed away, and Jesus gives hints that he's going to do something miraculous and that he will, quote, wake Lazarus up. But even his disciples still don't understand what Jesus means by sleep. So the Gospel of John puts it this way, quote, Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. End of story. It really reads that way. Jesus says, Lazarus has died. Sometimes we may need to hear that in our life, as I reflected on that. It's over, whatever it may be, but it's over. The fact of the matter is, there is no resurrection without death. There is no new life without death. There is no new beginning unless there is an ending. And there are times we simply cannot let go because we think it's just a pause or it's just a break. But in fact, it has died. Seems very harsh, almost cold on Jesus' part, but he just says, Lazarus has died. Plain and simple. Now, maybe the Lazarus in our life that has died is a dream. Maybe it's a relationship we've struggled with, or a season of life we've been hanging on to, or even the illusion of how we think things are and should be, but maybe that has died. I remember a few years ago where I was in a season of my life and I had these dreams, if you will, these plans for my life. And I realized that it wasn't going to happen. But what had kept me from moving forward in other areas of my life was the fact that I had put all my eggs in that one. And I kept thinking, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. But it never did. And I finally had to admit, it never will. But it was only until that point that other things began to open up when I could let go of that and say, it's died. It's time to bury it. And let whatever needs to resurrect and start anew to begin that process. What might seem like an ending for you is simply the opportunity for a new beginning, a resurrection, new life. And this is the promise and the hope of Easter, but we're getting way ahead of ourselves. That's a few weeks away. The second story is where Jesus is sitting with his disciples, spending time with them, washing their feet. Jesus offers these words. This is how everyone will know that you're my disciples, when you love each other. Plain and simple, my words. There is no final battle cry. There is no, let's kill them all and let God sort them out. There is just a simple invitation and command to love each other, to let that be the mark of your faithfulness and your commitment to the way of Jesus or discipleship. If I have a heartache, if I have a heartbreak, often it's how we, the church, when I say church, I mean capital C. It's how we, the church, often forget this very simple command and invitation to simply love each other. You know, 1 Corinthians 13 is read at weddings almost every time, and that's great. It's a great place to start. I'm not saying that's a bad place to begin. But Paul wrote that to a local church. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is gentle. Love doesn't keep any record of wrongs. Love is not irritable. What Paul was saying is this is what it looks like to love each other in the faith community. And this is what Jesus says, plain and simple. You want people to know that you go to church? Don't call them up and say, look, I'll pray for you if you pay me money. Just love them. Love the world. Love your neighbor. Love your enemy. And Jesus makes it plain and simple. People will know you are a follower of me by how faithfully you follow in the way of love. Not necessarily by our theological arguments, not necessarily by our political positions, not even maybe by our social justice positions. As important as those can be to who we are, Jesus says it simply and plainly. People will know you as a follower of me when you love others. You will never argue anybody into the kingdom. You will never protest anybody into the kingdom, but you will always love someone into that place and presence of God. And then the final story. Jesus says, your will must be done. Jesus' very simple words as he wrestles in the garden in prayer with what he knows is ahead of him. And even as he tries to negotiate with God a different way of accomplishing God's purposes, Jesus says, not my will, but your will must be done. Now, this isn't Jesus necessarily trying to figure out what to do with his life or who he should marry or what job he should take. As important as those are, that's often what we mean when we say, what is God's will for my life? We have some really big questions. What Jesus is doing is he is surrendering deeply to the way God intends to order and reorder the world, and what we often refer to as the kingdom of God or the reign a rule of God. Jesus is surrendering deeply to this new way of life, this new way of how things will be. And Jesus knows this new way is going to call for forgiveness. It's going to call for nonviolence. It's going to call for suffering and sacrifice. It's going to call for him absorbing, if you will, what his enemies throw at him. And he's going to have to recycle it back as love, as forgiveness and reconciliation. He knows this is what God's intent is. No negotiation. No, let's try this. He simply says, your will must be done, not my will, God, but your will. Plain and simple. I negotiate with God all the time. God, this feels more practical. This feels more realistic. You just don't understand how the world works. But then that's usually my way of trying to figure my way out. Of surrendering deeply to the way God intends the world to be. And Jesus says, plain and simple, not my will, God, but your will. And he knows what lays or is ahead of him. Ecclesiastes 7:29, it's in your bulletin, reads this. This is all that I have learned. God made us plain and simple, but we have made ourselves very complicated. I like to say sometimes that's my gift. I make things very complicated. I have been known to overthink things. I have been known to overanalyze them. I've been known to do all that and make it more complicated, and that's on me. And sometimes there's just some plain and simple ways of living that we are invited to do in the way of Jesus, in the way of God, as we see and read and understand what that is. It's in our spiritual DNA, if you will, to live plain and simple. One author, Catherine Whitmire, describes it this way, quote, through my personal journey, I've come to understand plain living as a matter of spiritual intent or an aim of the heart. And so as we saw, Jesus' spiritual intent or his aim of the heart was to go back to what I just looked at in these three stories, to to open himself to new life and new beginnings by naming what in his life had died or his Lazarus. So let me ask us this morning, what in our life do we need to name as having died so we can open ourselves to new life and new beginnings? Maybe it is a dream. Maybe in some ways it is a relationship. Maybe in some ways it's our own stuckness and soul. I don't know. But there is a cycle to life in that way, and it can be tough and it can be hard. But even when there's a Lazarus who dies, there is a Lazarus who is invited to come out and who walks again and lives again and breathes again. And that is the hope on the other side. There is possibility. Jesus' aim and intent was to love everyone and to mark his followers by the way they love. So how does love need to be more manifest in my life and in your life? And not just through words, but in action. And then Jesus surrendered his life to the purposes and intentions of God in the world, realizing it wasn't a negotiation of interest, but rather this complete surrendering of his will to God's overall will and intention. So what does it look like for you and I to completely surrender to God's overall intentions and purposes? And how am I holding out, or how am I holding back? Catherine Whitmire, I'll end with her words. She adds this, quote, "Plain living is a form of inward simplicity, and it leads us to listen for the still small voice of God, of God's claim upon our lives. It is both a spiritual lens and a discipline of holy obedience. This way of living, it simplifies our lives because when we focus our energies on what we discern by listening within, we're able to release all the extraneous activities and possessions that clutter our path." In other words, we minimize the complications and we elevate our peace and joy. And then she ends with this: living simply means clearing our lives and our houses of spiritual material and clutter to create more space for faithful living. And I think this, in essence, is the purpose for this season of Lent. It's a time of clearing more space in our life, in our souls, for faithful living. It's clearing space through listening to God. It's letting go what is no longer helpful, good, or necessary. It's rethinking our lives in light of God's intentions for our world. And it's surrendering ourselves to the way of Jesus. So plain and simple, that's what Jesus invites us to live. To listen to him, to watch him, to pay attention to him. What does that look like for me? What does it look like for you? What's it look like for us?